Hare Krishna. When so we are celebrating the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead today, Sri Rama. An important day. Sometimes the devotees of Krishna who live in Braj, they have a tendency to neglect this or to have a certain attitude about Ramachandra based on their desire to worship Krishna in a certain mood in Braj, Krishna's original Swayam Bhagavan form. And so therefore there's a tendency, not everyone, but there's a tendency, especially among less advanced devotees, nirvaya devotees, to have an attitude towards Lord Ram. You know, they don't want to look at Lord Ram because it'll interfere with their relationship with, you know, Krishna, the gopis, or something like that, something like that. So this is a misunderstanding. It's a mistake, actually. That doesn't mean that the minds of those who are worshipping Krishna in Braj will cultivate or go out of their way to be with Lord Ram. But the point is that when, in under natural circumstances, they have an opportunity to see Lord Ram or to contact Lord Ram, then they feel transcendental pleasure. They don't feel aversion. And those who do, they need to cultivate further the devotional service in order to come to that stage. Because no one can enter into Braj or any other of Krishna's holy dhams or the incarnations of Krishna's holy dhams with that attitude of aversion towards any of the incarnations of Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya was here, and when he delivered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great philosopher, and such a great philosopher that even though he was a householder, thousands of sannyasis would come to him to learn Vedanta. Such a great person. He was based in Jagannath Puri, of course, which is one of the, you know, centers of spiritual devotion in India. And Lord Chaitanya made Puri his base after he toured South India and preached and showed us that the way to get to Braj is to preach Krishna consciousness, the way to get to the higher planes of consciousness that he exhibited while he was in Puri was to go out and preach the glories of Krishna. So anyway, after he did that and he came and he was staying in Jagannath Puri, he had this discussion with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and he delivered him. And at a very emotional and crucial moment in the relationship, when just after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had realized that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself, and he got up that morning, and Mahaprabhu came to him and brought him some Mahaprasadam. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was smarta. He was a smarta brahmana. A smarta brahmana is strictly, rigidly fixed in regulative principles. He will not deviate from the rituals that are described in the shastras regarding Krishna's worship, deity worship, etc., etc. So one of the things that you have to do before you take prasadam, you should be clean. You should take bath, you should be clean before you honor prasadam, before you have anything to do with anything, with the deities or Krishna's transcendental paraphernalia. But in order to show the world that when one has attained Krishna consciousness, sometimes the rules can, under certain special circumstances, be bent or be relaxed. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the prasadam of Lord Jagannath to Sarvabhauma, he immediately took it. He was still in the bed. He had not gotten up, he had not taken his bath, he had not done any of his rituals, and he took that prasadam immediately. And this way, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught something about spontaneous devotional service. Not that we should imitate that, and not bathe. I see now even devotees staying in Vrindavan who don't bathe frequently enough and don't do regulated things, and when you ask them, well, anyway, oh, it's transcendental, this is the dust of the Dham, why should we wash it off? We're becoming purified by it. Not realizing that, you know, the six Vaishnavas of Vrindavan, what to speak of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our previous acharyas, Srila Prabhupada himself, was completely puck up in all of his dealings, in all of his principles of cleanliness and truthfulness and virtue on all levels. Anyway, so then when he took that prasadam, then Lord Chaitanya was very pleased with him. So he benedicted Sarvabhauma Acharya by giving him darshan, by showing him that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The darshan that he gave him was Sadbhuj. You can still see there's Sadbhuj deity in Sarvabhauma Acharya's house in Puri. You can still see. And this Sadbhuj deity is very significant because the deity was, you know, there was a golden form holding a kamandu and a danda, and then there was, you know, a form, six-armed, Sadbhuj means six-armed, and then there was a form with bluish arms playing flute, and then there was another two arms that were greenish carrying a bow and arrow. The purpose of this darshan was to show Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was a great scholar, that there is no difference between Lord Chaitanya, Krishna, and Ramachandra. And the deeper significance is that this is a manifestation of the three incarnations of Krishna that are complete, full incarnations. In other words, they are not partial incarnations, as are the other incarnations of Krishna. Now, this doesn't mean that Lord Ramachandra shows all of the features of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. He doesn't. He's the same person. He's the same person. And he exhibits a human-like pastimes. And that's why these three features are there in Sadbhuj. Krishna exhibited human-like pastimes, Lord Ramachandra exhibited human-like pastimes, and Lord Chaitanya exhibited human-like pastimes. The other art incarnations don't exhibit human-like pastimes. So, for devotees of Sri Krishna, particularly devotees who are worshipping Sri Krishna in his original Swayam Bhagavan feature of Shyamasundara in Vrindavan, we may not be fully attracted to the incarnation of Lord Ramachandra, but we have to be extremely careful, as I said before, not to develop a wrong attitude and to not feel joy upon seeing Lord Ramachandra, especially when he comes into our field of vision or in a natural way like his appearance day, we get an opportunity to worship him. So I'm going to read a little section from the Bhagavatamrita in the second part, fourth chapter, where Gopakumar goes to Ayodhya. You know, Gopakumar goes to all these different places looking for the place where Madan Gopal lives. His worshipable deity is Madan Gopal. He's a cowherd boy from Govardhan, and his worshipable deity is Madan Gopal. So as he goes through all the different higher planetary systems, through the coverings of the universe, enters into the spiritual world, goes to the Vaikuntha planets, finally he goes to Ayodhya, not finally, but he's now in Ayodhya, and we can hear something about this idea directly from Sanatana Goswami. It's a few verses and few purports. I'm going to read them, and then we'll discuss something about the past tense of Lord Ramachandra. So Narada has explained to Gopakumar, who was in Vaikuntha, that it was time for him to move on because he didn't feel completely satisfied in Vaikuntha. So we're beginning to read from chapter 4, part 2, Riya Bhagavatamrita, text number 250. Shri Gopakumar Uvacha Chutvatan Nitaram Rishto Mohu Shri Naradam Daman Deyashir Adanam Adhaya Chiksham Chanus Marammayam. Shri Gopakumar said, overjoyed at hearing this from Narada, that means overjoyed by hearing from Narada that we should go on now to Ayodhya, I bowed down repeatedly to Sri Narada, took his blessings, and set out remembering his instructions. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Giriraj Govindan. Commentary, Digdarshini. After leaving for Ayodhya, Gopakumar followed Narada's instructions about remembering Lord Ramachandra's glories by chanting, O husband of Sri Sita, Raghunath, dear brother of Lakshmana, O Lord, dear master of Hanuman, Sri Hanuman. That verse is an earlier verse of Riya Bhagavatamrita in the same chapter, text 243. It goes like this: Sita Pate Sri Raghunatha Lakshmana Jeshta Prabho Sri Hanumat Prayeshwara Ityadikam Kirtaya Veda Shashyataha Khyatam Madamstad guna rupam aibabam. Text 251. Durat eva gato draksham bhananarams tanitastada plabamanam mahalolan ramarameti bharinaha. After traveling a long way, I saw some forest monkeys restlessly jumping here and there and shouting, Ram, Ram. A little later I'll explain to you the background of this. There's a wonderful prologue to this pastime in which some of the incidents that happened were put into motion by different interactions that Ravana had with different persons. I'll explain to you that a little later. Why the monkeys were there. Why Lord Ramachandra had an army of monkeys rather than a regular army.
Tai saha gregato bangshim akarshad bikaran mama narana pasham vaikunta parshadibyo.
As I proceeded, they gathered around me and tried to grab my flute from my hand. Our monkeys just try to grab the chapatis, if you're holding a chapati. Then I saw some humans who were even more beautiful than the associates of the Lord of Vaikuntha. He had just come from Vaikuntha, and he was overwhelmed by the beauty of the associates of Vaikuntha Pati, the Lord of Vaikuntha, Vishnu. So now he's amazed because he thought they were the most beautiful creatures he had ever seen, beings he'd ever seen, and now he's seeing these features more beautiful. Commentary. Those monkeys were grabbing at Gopakumar's flute either because they could not bear someone's being a devotee of any other lord than Sri Raghunath, or because they were extremely attached to the flute. So even when we become pure devotees, we, you know, a little of our natures stay with us. It's not that we completely change our natures. Prabhupada used to joke, when you become a devotee, it doesn't mean that, you know, you grow two more arms or you become like this or become like that. You still are the same person in this material body. But you change your habits and you change your aspirations and you change your different things. So these monkeys were playing, as you can see. The other day I was chanting my rounds and I was watching. Of course, the big ones, they don't play. They're nasty. But the little children monkeys, baby monkeys, they're very playful, extremely playful. And I was watching them. They were jumping on each other and playing and running around and jumping. Then they saw some cloth and they ran to get to the cloth first. And one grabbed the cloth out of the other's hand and started going like this. You know, they're very playful, you know, monkeys. So either they were just being playful and were attached to the flute, because you know how monkeys are when we were doing this place. Anytime you got something that was nice, different, special, the monkeys would immediately go for that. They would ignore anything else and immediately go to that. So, or because these are not ordinary monkeys, these are great devotees of Lord Ramachandra in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, it's not that everybody has a forearm form, or everybody has a form that looks just like Ramachandra or just like Krishna. It's not like that. It's an unlimited variety in the spiritual world. And that unlimited variety is born of the different moods and relationships that the Lord devotees have with Him. And Yogamaya, the internal potency of Krishna, reciprocates with the devotees and with Krishna in their desires to have loving relationships. And so, the pastimes of the Lord, therefore, exhibit all kinds of different features in order to make interesting for the devotees and for Krishna, more and more pleasing, the atmosphere. Unlimited variety. You cannot imagine, we cannot imagine. We look at the material world and we see so much variety. It is just a little spark, as Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, what use is all this talk about the great? With a little spark of my splendor, I maintain this universe. So that means that it's just a little tiny bit of his energy that's here in this material world. The variety that's here in the material world is just a little spot of the variety that is there in Vaikuntha. So when devotees who are, you know, either immature or have ill motivations or ulterior motives, they try to argue with one another about different things that go on in the spiritual world, or how things happen in Lord's pastimes in the material world, they're arguing uselessly, because the Lord's pastimes are unlimited. And only one who is fully surrendered in selfless service, who has assimilated in that way the principle of achintya shakti, who has understood the inconceivable nature of Krishna, can actually understand. So here you have this point being made. Gopakumar is coming and the monkeys are coming after him and playing with his flute, trying to grab his flute. And there's different ways of looking at it, depending on who you are in the spiritual world. They may have been very attached. They don't want anybody to be a cowherd boy here, because they are so attached to Lord Ram. Or they just may have been playful monkeys trying to bother him or try to get something for them to play and enjoy with. After Gopakumar walked a short distance with the monkeys, he saw some human associates of Lord Ramachandra. They appeared more beautiful than any other servants of a lord he had ever seen, including the four-handed residents of Vaikuntha, who were blessed with the perfection of sarupya, having bodily forms like that of Sri Narayan. You see, beginning from Ayodhya, you don't have that feature of liberation. There's five kinds of liberation. Sarupya, Sarshti, Samipya, Salokya, and Sayujya. Five features of liberation. To merge into Krishna, to become, to have a form like Vishnu's, to live in the same place as Vishnu, you know, to enjoy the same opulence as Krishna, like this. So, this sarupya feature only goes into Vaikuntha, because there's not another form that looks like Lord Ramachandra. You know, Yogya. There's not another form that looks like Krishna, exactly like Krishna in Dwarka, or what to speak of Shyamasundara in Vrindavan. There's no other form. They are unique. Therefore, the monkeys, you know, the humans, rather, the forms that are resembling human beings are even more beautiful than the Sarup devotees. So the devotees who had attained Sarup, Sarupya in Vaikuntha. This is the progression in the spiritual world. Every devotee who has a relationship with Krishna and who is in a particular dham, a particular place in the spiritual world, they are completely satisfied with that relationship. And they are completely satisfied with the accoutrements, the paraphernalia and the pastimes and everything that is there in that particular dham. But still, when one looks objectively at and analyzes, the acharyas have analyzed, there's more features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that are exhibited as you go from Vaikuntha towards Vrindavan. It's described here after he traveled for a long time, long way. So along that way, you know, you come into contact with different persons and different things, different atmospheres. From the edge of the material world to finally Goloka Vrindavan, the topmost place. And in each place, the more and more of the opulences of Vaikuntha are exhibited, including the different features of the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord's devotees. They become more and more beautiful, more and more attractive, more and more opulent, more and more everything. So Gopal Kumar is amazed. Lord Ramachandra fits into a category, in a sense. You know, his abode is in between Vaikuntha and Dwarka, which is on the edge of Goloka Vrindavan. You know, Goloka Vrindavan is described, Brahma Samhita, to be situated in such a way as Vrindavan is in the center, and then there's Gokul that surrounds Vrindavan, and then there's Goloka that surrounds Gokul. And in each one of those places, there's different, and then the Shweta Dweep, you know, that surrounds Golok. And in each one of those places, there's different varieties of pastimes, and there's different features of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. And then when you come beyond that, the first planet on the way to Shweta Dweep is Ayodhya. So Ayodhya is exhibiting more of the spiritual qualities than any of the Vaikuntha planets. Only Goloka Vrindavan, you know, do the opulences and the pastimes and the devotees and the forms of the Lord exceed Ayodhya. But to the residents of Ayodhya, you try to tell that to Hanuman, and you will get not very far. You remember in the first part, we read that pastime where, you know, Lord Krishna wanted to show the glories of or of Hanuman to Narada or somebody. I think it was Narada. So he told him to go. Oh no, Garuda. It was to Garuda. Yeah. He told Garuda, you go and tell Hanuman that Krishna of Dwarka wants to see him. Krishna of Dwarka is not different than Lord Ramachandra, but he's different at the same time. So he came and delivered the message, and Hanuman was worshipping his deity. He lives in Kimpurusha Loka, and he worships this deity of Ram, which is just like Ram. To him, it's just like Ram. He's the perfection of deity worship. You watch Hanuman worship his deity of Ram in Kimpurusha Loka. You'll see the perfection of deity worship, because he treats the deity exactly like he's the person. No difference. So Hanuman said, yes, yes, right now I'm busy. And he just kind of dismissed him. Garuda got very upset. He says, you're dismissing my lord? You know, Dwarkanath? Who are you? And then he began to get upset. You know, even devotees sometimes, they fight with one another. So he began to get upset. And he was going to even attack Hanuman and grab him and take him, because he had gotten the order from his lord, you know. He had the order, bring Hanuman there. Of course, sometimes these servants don't understand the order completely. So he didn't understand that he was trying to tell him a pastime. So he just tried to grab Hanuman and bring him by force. And Hanuman just went like this with his tail, just boom. And as soon as he hit Garuda, Garuda went flying, you know. And he ended up back in Dwarka. He landed, and there's, you know, Krishna laughing at him. He's laughing at Garuda. So then he said, okay, I know what happened. So now you go back. We don't want you to end like this, because this is not auspicious. You go back and you tell Hanuman that Lord Raghunath wants to see him. He's there in Dwarka and he wants to see him. So he went back and he approached him carefully. And he said, Hanumanji, Lord Raghunath wants to see you. And he immediately said, Lord Raghunath? Because, you know, when Lord Ramachandra went back to Ayodhya, he left Hanuman in the material world. It's a very difficult thing to understand. And also at the same time, Hanuman went back to Ayodhya in the spiritual world. Both. Because Lord Ramachandra, this is a very interesting subject matter, and I'm not going to go into the detail. You can read Shiva Maharaj's new book to find out the detail about this, but the aprakat and prakat, and how things go on sometimes simultaneously, and sometimes they seem to be different, but they're simultaneous at the same time. The associates of the Lord are always expansions of the Lord's associates in Goloka Vrindavan. Very difficult to understand, because they're also eternal. It's not that there was a time when there was not Lord Ramachandra, or there was a time when there was not Hanuman, and then, you know, Krishna expanded into this, and then expanded into this, and then expanded, and finally there was Hanuman. No, they're eternal. All these different personalities, and all these different abodes, and all these different relationships, they're eternal. They're always there. They have always been there. There's never a time when Vaikuntha was created. And yet at the same time, there's this principle that the associates of Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Shyamasundar, his mother, his father, his friends, his playmates, his servants, all his entourage, they all become, wherever he goes in incarnation, they all go with him. They expand themselves and they go with him. In this case, Garuda is actually Sridhar in Goloka Vrindavan, in Vrindavan. So these a little difficult to understand, but anyway, these things are going on. Unlimited, the spiritual world is unlimited. So then Hanuman said, my Lord Raghunath wants to see me? And he jumped. He left Garuda just standing there. You know, before Garuda could fly, Hanuman jumped faster than Garuda. This shows that not only do the expansions of Krishna exhibit more and more of their potencies, until finally Sri Krishna exhibits the full potency of the Godhead, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the same applies to his associates. So because Garuda is in a lower position, actually, than Hanuman, because, you know, Hanuman is in Ayodhya. Ayodhya is in between Vaikuntha and Garuda is from Vaikuntha. So therefore, Hanuman is greater, in a sense. He exhibits more, he can dominate. So therefore, Hanuman can jump faster than Garuda could fly. So anyway, that was the story. And then, you know, he jumped, and when he jumped directly to Dwarka, and in the meantime, Krishna had changed his form into the form of Lord Ramachandra. And he had convinced Rukmini, he wanted to convince Satyabhama, but Satyabhama, she couldn't take the form of Sita. Sita's too sweet, too passive. Satyabhama was too different nature, because she couldn't do it. But anyway, Rukmini was the same nature, so she expanded herself into Sita, and like that, Balaram expanded himself into Lakshman, and so Hanuman was able to come there and see his Lord and serve him nicely. And turned out a nice ending to the story. Then Garuda came and saw the greatness of the devotion that Lord Ramachandra, that Hanuman had for Lord Ramachandra. Text 253.
Tar-e-bhāryā vanācāyāyā mannat ād asahishnubhī purim braveshito bhāyam prak-prakoshtam aghammaham.
Those men, in behavior like the best of civilized persons, could not tolerate my bowing down to them and showing other signs of respect. They brought me to the boundary of their city and through the main gate. Commentary. Both the humans and the monkeys escorted Gopakumar into Lord Ramachandra's city. When they reached the gateway, Gopakumar was so overwhelmed with ecstasy from seeing these associates of the Lord that he could not enter on his own strength, but only with their help. This is the effect of transcendental pleasure, or the effect of transcendental ecstasy, is that sometimes the normal functions of the senses and mind become dominated by extreme feelings of ecstasy. So Gopakumar was experiencing this extreme affection, extreme, he was overwhelmed, so he couldn't walk himself, he had to be carried or at least assisted. Lord Ramachandra must have sent these devotees out of the city to meet Gopakumara, because without their Lord's order, such devotees, exclusively dedicated to the rasa found at his lotus feet, would never have ventured so far away. Gopakumara could not behave with the men he saw the same way as with the residents of Vaikuntha, because these devotees of Lord Ramachandra did not allow him to show any respect. So here we have another aspect of the difference between Ayodhya and Vaikuntha. Sometimes it is said that, you know, there's Vrindavan, then there's Mathura, and then there's Dwarka, the different divisions of Goloka Vrindavan, and then there's Shwetadweep, which is Lord Chaitanya's place. So in each one of those, there's more opulence is displayed. Actually, there's most opulence is displayed in Vrindavan, but this is just to understand the difference in the moods. So similarly, when you go from Dwarka to Ayodhya, there's a little less opulence. When you go from Ayodhya to Vaikuntha, there's a little less opulence. So a part of that opulence is the display of awe and respect and protocol and, you know, the way you act when an extremely elevated person comes into your presence. You naturally maintain your distance and are careful, more careful, what you say, what you do, like that. And depending on the relationship you have, you know, you'll exhibit that more or less. So, here, the devotees of Lord Ramachandra, they have less of this protocol. Because Lord Ramachandra's pastimes are human-like. There's less protocol. Even Lord Ramachandra exhibits extreme mystic power when he defeated Ravana. Still, he did it in a way that's why he had the monkeys rather than a regular band of warriors. You know, he built his bridge by, you know, getting the monkeys to go and put boulders into the earth, into the water, rather than having some, you know, huge construction company go. They were just, you know, the monkeys came to help him. Because everything is meant to make it more human-like, more sweet, in a sense. I hinted at the beginning that I would say something about how Lord Ramachandra's pastimes were organized. But everything that Krishna does is organized in an extremely wonderful way. You know, Ravana was extremely powerful demon. Actually, he was more powerful than any human being. He had done austerities, extreme austerities. And he had gotten a boon from Brahma, right? That no one could kill him except for a human being. He would not be killed by anyone except for a human being. Hence, Lord Ramachandra came as a human being to kill Ravana. And after Ravana had achieved these boons, he would just tour the universe, just looking for people to fight with, looking for people to disturb, anywhere he could go to disturb the Brahmins. At one point he had a fight with senior moment. He had a fight with Kuvera. He was the brother, actually. He was actually the brother of Kuvera. Yeah, in a fight with Kuvera, he actually beat him. And as a result, he got his chariot. And he used to drive around in this chariot. But this chariot was like not an ordinary chariot. It was like a city. It was like a celestial city with palaces, lakes, and gardens. And, you know, it was a chariot. It was flying through the air, like that aerial mansion that Kardama created. Remember the Bhagavatam? It was like that. A mystic. It's a mystic kind of thing. So he was traveling around, going here and going there, and, you know, just creating havoc everywhere. And he was flying over this one forest, and he saw this lady sitting there in meditation. Not just an ordinary lady, she was young and extremely attractive. And, you know, demons have this uncontrollable and insatiable thirst for enjoyment. So they're always looking for women to enjoy with. And he stopped, you know, even though his men were everywhere and they were creating havoc with all the sages, and, you know, he saw this woman and he became attracted. So he went himself down in front of this lady, and she was meditating, and she was extremely youthful, extremely attractive, and she had deerskin covering herself and thin cloth and, you know, matted hair. She had obviously been sitting there for a long time, but her form was just gorgeous. It looked like it was just fresh, never. So he became extremely attracted to this woman, and he started to talk out loud. Who are you? You know, whose wife are you? Why are you out here by yourself? And she opened her eyes and she started to talk to him. She said, my name is Vedapati. I was born as from the personified Vedas, and I, when they wanted me to marry, I decided that I could only marry Vishnu. So ever since then, since the beginning of the creation, I've been sitting here meditating on Vishnu and waiting for the day when I can marry Vishnu, because I can only be touched by Vishnu. I belong to Vishnu. So Ravana, Vishnu is Ravana's big enemy, so he got very upset at this, you know, and he just, Vishnu, who is this Vishnu? I'm Ravana, I can, you know, do anything, you know, you should come with me, you should become my queen, I can give you everything, this and that. So then, you know, demons are crude, and he's a Rakshasa, he's a demon. Rakshasas are actually they're higher species than humans. They're superior to humans in every way. So he said, you know, what is this Vishnu? So he grabbed her by the hair, and he was going to, you know, force her. And so she looked from her eyes, and she cut her hair where he was grabbing. And she cut the hair, and he fell back, you know. And he looked at her, and she said, "You rascal." He said, "Because you defiled my body, I will now leave my body in your presence. And I'm telling you that you will be killed by a woman. Because you touched me wrongly. A woman will be the cause of your death." And he said, I will incarnate in a certain family, and I will be the cause of your death. So this was difficult to understand, but you know, sometimes the Lord's associates, they'll take incarnations in one place, and then they'll go to another place, and then go to another place, all simultaneous. You know, sometimes the demigods, sometimes the associates of Krishna will come, you know, into Vaikuntha. Like for instance, trying to think of an example. Senior moment, I can't remember the names, but anyway, there's one great servant of Dwarkanath who comes and becomes Nanda, the servant of, it may even be Dwarka. Anyway, he becomes a servant of Vaikunthanath in Vaikuntha. And from there, he sometimes expands himself into the material world and becomes an associate again of Krishna, the full associate of Krishna. Anyway, this is a very deep subject. I can't go into the details of this subject. You can read Shiva Ramaraj's book and it'll explain it to you perfectly. But what happened was, she was actually an expansion, you know, of an expansion of an expansion of Sita, who then again merged into Sita and became the responsible for killing Ravana. So, but Ravana, he's like, he doesn't take anything seriously. You know, the demons, even when his death is in their face, or even when, you know, something happens to them so obvious that they should change or that they should adjust themselves, they can't do it. This is the demoniac principle. They can't change. They can't do it. They can't bend. They can't submit to anybody else's authority. Because they're demons because they want to be the authority. They want to be the supreme authority. So, so he left her and he went back, he went on, he was continuing with his tour, you know, of finding people to fight with and disturbances to make. And he came into a place and he saw this being, very unusual looking being. The being had a monkey face and body that was kind of not so beautiful to look at, like distorted kind of features. And he started, you know, laughing at him, right? And this was actually Nandi, associate of Shiva. It's actually a form of the associate of Shiva. And so he began to insult and abuse Nandi, Ravana. You know, and finally, at some point, they were on a mountain. They were on a mountain. And at some point, you know, Ravana decided that he was going to, you know, he asked Nandi, who are you? He said, well, I'm the servant of Lord Shiva. You've come to Lord Shiva's abode and now you can't go any further. You know, persons of your character and your, they can't come in here. And Ravana became furious. I can't come in here. Me, Ravana, you know, this is the demon. No place he can't go, nothing he can't do. So he took his arms. Ravana had many arms. And he stuck his arms into this mountain that where Nandi was staying. And he started to shake the mountain with his arms because he was very powerful. And, you know, Nandi was becoming, you know, and then Lord Shiva was there with Parvati and he became disturbed, so much so that Parvati and he were together and she got kind of thrown off and Shiva got very upset. He said, what is this? Then he understood, by his mystic power, he understood this was Ravana. And he also understood what was going to happen, that Ravana, this was just Ravana's, was going to get taken care of later on by Lord Ramachandra. So he put his foot down on the mountain. Put his foot down on the mountain, and the mountain got so heavy that the mountain came down and it trapped Ravana. It trapped him. And he couldn't get out. And not only that, his assistant, all of his associates put together, they couldn't get him out. You know, and he stayed there for 100 years underneath this mountain. Trapped, half trapped in the mountain. And finally, you know, Nandi or someone, I don't remember exactly who, but someone told to Ravana, this is Lord Shiva's done this, and even you cannot, you know, like defeat Lord Shiva, so you must pray to Lord Shiva. So Ravana, who had been trained, he had learned Vedic mantras, he had learned these things, and so he began to chant these prayers. And he chanted the prayers for 100 years. And, you know, Shiva just didn't listen. That's very serious because Lord Shiva, normally, he's very easily pleased. Someone offers him prayers, he becomes pleased and he gives him benediction, Ashutosh. So finally he did. Finally he became pleased with Ravana and he let the mountain up. And then he told Ravana that, you know, just stop this nonsense and then you just let him go. So anyway, and Nandi looked at it and he said, because you've done this and because you've insulted me in such a nasty way, I want you to know, and you laughed at my monkey features, now you will be undone by a band of monkeys. So this way, and as usual, you know, Ravana thinks, he's so proud, he thinks, oh, well, you know, what can these, you know, monkeys do to me? So he just dismissed it, you know, and he went on. So then, a little bit further, he saw another lady. This lady was quite special. This was Ramba. Ramba was the wife of Yamaraj. She was the wife of the son of Yamaraj, Nalakuvera. And she was also extremely attractive. You know, heavenly girls, they're unlimitedly more attractive than women here. And so he became completely smitten by this lady. And this time, because there was no one around to protect her, he actually had his way with this lady. Forced her. Raped her. And he became very, you know, pleased with himself. But she went back to Nalakuvara. And there was a fight. And at one point, Yamaraj finally came out, realizing that his son, you know, was in trouble. He came out in his own. I mean, Rama, you know, he had defeated everybody, Ravana, and he was about ready to do the needful. And then finally, Yamaraj himself came out. Yamaraj has a chariot that's even more extreme than Kuvera's chariot. And he was about ready to kill Ravana. And just as he was about ready to kill Ravana, Brahma appeared to Yamaraj. But no one else could see Brahma. Only Yamaraj could see Brahma. Even Ravana could not see Brahma. And he told Yamaraj, he said, look, he said, you can't kill him at this time because I already gave a benediction that he could only be killed by a human. So if you try to kill him, who knows what will happen? The whole universe, I mean the population, the whole universe may get disturbed, the whole order. Because this was Ravana's thing, see? This is the issue. The demons want to disrupt the natural order, the order of the universe. That's why when our demoniac side comes out, we don't want to follow rules. We don't want to follow regulations. We don't want to submit to authority. Right? This is the demoniac nature. Prabhupada said, in Kali Yuga, all of us have both demoniac and divine natures inside of us. What to speak of in different families or different communities or different, you know, nations or whatever. Inside us we have both these natures. And the demoniac side doesn't want to submit to anybody or anything, doesn't want to follow rules and regulations, doesn't want to be regulated, doesn't want to be clean, wants to be lazy. That's why we're always harping. You know, Prabhupada harped on us about this a lot because we were born in the West and we had bad habits from the beginning. And so he would harp on us about cleanliness. He would harp on us about regulations. You know, when the deity doors didn't open on time, he was right there to chastise us. Because it's the tendency to put your own, you know, necessities or your own, you know, thing before Krishna's. Let Krishna adjust. I'm in the wrong mood, or something's happened. We can adjust the timing of the opening of the deities. But no, the opposite is true. Once it's officiated, especially in a temple, in the temples where Rajbhog standard is being maintained, especially under those circumstances for the general public temples, it has to be on time. Not a second this or a second that. It has to be exactly on time. And the demoniac tendency wants to adjust, to make the Lord adjust his, you know, timings to my timing. Because I can't regulate my senses. So anyway, when Ramba finally went back and reported what had happened, she cursed Ravana also. I mean, this Ravana was getting one curse after another, you know. And all the combined curses, you know, ended up not dictating exactly, but this is the divine will, divine providence. You know, there's mundane providence and there's divine providence. Even Krishna acts according to providence. But that providence is different. He's not forced exactly. But Yoga Maya, the internal energy, arranges things in such a way so that the pastimes unfold in a way that different personalities' curses or different personalities' desires or things that have happened with them can be fulfilled. So she cursed Ramba, she cursed Ravana. He said, you raped me, therefore the next time you have your way with a woman against your will, you will die. So this is what saved Sita. You see? Because finally when he finally kidnapped Sita, he wanted to have his way with her, but he was smart and he knew this one couldn't be right. Because he had seen before sages curse and have the curse and the curses happen. They actually come true. And he was smart. So he said, okay, there's enough women for me anyway, there's enough women that will submit to me, so I don't need to force anyone. Why should I have to force them? So this saves Sita, in a sense. So these are some of the background stories of why the pastimes unfolded the way they did, why Lord Ramachandra had a monkey army, why he did things in the way he did, a human-like way he did things. How Sita was saved, all these things. But the... So we'll go on from there. So Gopakumar could not behave with the men he saw the same way as with the residents of Vaikuntha, because these devotees of Lord Ramachandra did not allow him to show any respect. They were just like the best of Aryans in their behavior, very modest and considerate to everyone. Indeed, the civilized Aryans have learned many of their standards of conduct from the devotees of Lord Ram. This is why Ram Raj, this is why Lord Ramachandra is so popular in India. Because people who are actually desirous of maintaining the Vedic culture, they see the example, the topmost example of cultured behavior in Lord Ram and in the associates of Lord Ram and in that pastime of Lord Ramachandra. How gentle Lord Ramachandra was. How submissive. How sweet, natured, and cultured he was. We cannot imagine. I mean, when it came time for him to be exiled to the forest, he went because some envious woman just made a co-wife of his mother. She said, no, you have to go. My son has to be the king. Everybody loved Lord Ramachandra. And yet she said, he didn't come from my womb, so therefore he should go to the forest so that Bard can become the king. And Lord Ramachandra was so submissive and sweet-natured and so... but almost innocent. He would not want to do anything to upset, his brother, or anything to upset his father. And he could see that his father was in a compromised position. He was being pressured, and it was very, very... So he immediately said, yes, yes, I'll go. And he went. But this is just one little example. In every way, when Jatayu, After Ravan had kidnapped Sita and he was flying in Rakshasa, this guy was a Rakshasa, he could fly. He had so many sorcery, mystic powers he had. He could fly and he was carrying Sita. Of course, he wasn't carrying Sita. It was another form of Sita, illusory form of Sita. He could not touch. No one can touch Sita except for Lord Ramachandra. Anyway, he was thinking he was doing this. So he went. He was flying with Sita. And Jatayu, this big bird, vulture bird, great devotee of Lord Ramachandra, saw this and he came to try to save Sita. And of course, Ravana, the story, killed, Jatayu. Just before Jatayu died, Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman came there and they found out from him, that it was Ravana and where he had gone. That way they got their clue where to go to Lanka. And in doing that, then he died, and Ramachandra wept. He wept, openly wept on the spot. Uncontrollably, he was crying. He had so much affection for his devotees. Even if it was just a bird. But the bird had sacrificed his life to try to serve him, to try to help him. So like that, Ramachandra was a very special incarnation. He showed perfectly how to execute Dharma under all circumstances. One of the reasons why the Ramayana is so filled with, tragedy, pathos, is because, he showed the perfect example of how a leader, he was the perfect king, and he showed how the leader should sacrifice under all conditions, his own, anything, actually. For the citizens. And of course we know the most touching pastime. After he had battled with Ravana, after all the curses had come true, and finally Ravana and all of his dynasty were smashed to smithereens, and Ramachandra came with Sita to Ayodhya, glorious Ram Vijay. celebration. And then they were living happily there. After Sita had proved herself, she went into the fire to prove herself pure, that she was never touched by Ravana. Everybody proved it by walking into the fire and coming out the other side, pure, untouched. No question of anything had been compromised with Sita. And yet because these low-class people were talking about it, when Ramachandra was going around, sometimes the king would disguise himself and go around, or send others to go around to find out what the people are thinking. And when he heard this, the people were thinking, still, she stayed there, so then how can he stay with her? Such high virtue, such high moral principles, we cannot even imagine now. And finally, Lord Ramachandra said, yes, it's more important what the citizen think. I will give up Sita. Inconceivable. He had fought the whole Rakshas race and destroyed them for her. So attached he is to her. And yet when it came to, and you know, when it came to, you know, setting the example so that the people could have faith in their leader, then he would sacrifice anything, all the way up to Sita. So these things are very, very difficult to understand because they're transcendental, and you know, so later on Gopa Kumar, he's there and he's overwhelmed by all these wonderful qualities of Bhagavan Chandra. But still, he's a devotee of Madan Gopal, so he begins to think of Madan Gopal. And like he was, but he didn't look at Lord Ramachandra and, you know, turn his head away and then go off, and not like that. This is immature understanding. People who try to go into these higher topics without being mature, they'll act like this. I know one famous example of one devotee who was the disciple of Giriraj Maharaj, a great devotee of Lama Ramachandra in Bombay, and became connected with another spiritual authority, senior spiritual authority, and who was teaching, you know, Madhurya Ras with Krishna, gopis. And so at one point, you know, under the direction, or at least she thought it was under the direction, it's still not clear, but anyway, under the direction of this philosophy, she stopped going in front of the altar of Hanuman because she didn't want to interfere with her relationship with Radharasa Bihari. So this is not the right thing. Not that we turn our face away from Rama when Rama's there. We see Krishna. Even if you're not in this mood of being a worshipper of Lord Ramachandra, even if you are in the mood of a gopi or gopa or Vatsalya Rasa Krishna Vrindavan, even that is your hankering, even if that is your actual position, when you come to actually come in contact with the other incarnations of Krishna, you feel ecstasy and you see Krishna in them. So even Lord Ramachandra, even Gopa Kumar, when he would sometimes see Lord Ramachandra and he would see Chamsundar and he would see the associates of Ramachandra, and he would see literally, you know, the coward boys, the associates of Krishna. So then after some time of that, then he couldn't stay there, but it's still, and then he would feel dissatisfied, but then he would have an association with Ram and he would become completely satisfied. Because he's Krishna. So he would feel satisfied. And at some point, Lord Ramachandra himself, because no one else could have told him to go from that place, before Narada Muni told to go from Vaikuntha to go to Ayodhya. Right? And Gopa Kumar, remember, Gopa Kumar hesitated because he needed to get permission. He wanted to get permission from Vaikuntha before he would go. Narada Muni said, oh, you don't have to get that permission because you're just going to see him in another form. You're not going anywhere. You're just going to see him. So you don't need to get permission. He wants you to go. Take it from me and you can go. But when he was in Ayodhya, because Lord Ramachandra is more human-like, more sweet, more personal, he came himself and he told Gopala, you please go to Dwarka. I know you. You're not. You can't be happy here. You know, and they'll just, you'll just agitate them. So just go now. You go. So, this is the way the devotees will go from Lord Ramachandra. And it says in the verses that Gopal Kumar could not go from Lord Ramachandra. His association was so sweet. It was so nectarine. He couldn't go there, from there. It took Lord Ramachandra himself to tell him, you go. Then he went. Only that. So, it's described later on that this principle that Gopal Kumar's love for Krishna would increase. His love for Madan Gopal, specifically, his love for Madan Gopal would increase when he came in contact with the different incarnations of Krishna. Even though they were not in the same mood, even though he could not exchange with them the love that he wanted to exchange in the way that he wanted to exchange, still his love for Krishna would increase by seeing those personalities. This is the Siddhanta. This is the Siddhanta. So we should always remember that. And we should, you know, worship Krishna. And when it comes time for the appearance and disappearance days of these special personalities and incarnations of Krishna, we should see them in relationship with Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just like he would sometimes show Ramachandra, his form of Ramachandra, to Morai Gupta. They have this another misconception they have. They think if you take, you know, you're in Lord Chaitanya's movement, therefore you must be in Madhurya Ras. And if you have any other Radha, then you're, you know, it's like, they have this idea, you have to have a, you know, Madhurya Ras Guru, and, you know, if you don't have him, then you have to go to another one. And this way they're like prostitutes. They go from one to another, trying to find the Guru who's in the Rasa that they actually want, when in fact they're not qualified to even know what they want yet, because they refuse to follow the basic rules and refuse to assimilate, you know, the second, third chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And they think that they're going to go to the, you know, higher rasas. Ridiculous. Anyway, so this is the way. Even the Brajvasis in Vrindavan, in Krishna's Leela, they would give respect to different great souls, great yogis, great sages. They would worship Durga. Was Yashoda Ma's deity, and Nrisingadev was Nanda Maharaj's deity, and Surya was Radharani's deity. You think that they were like disrespectful of these persons? No. But they were only wanting Krishna. But still, within the cultural context, within the culture, they would follow all the cultural things. Just like perfect example. When Durvasa Muni comes across the Yamuna, Gokul, and he sets up his camp there, Durvasa Muni is a yogi, he's not a pure devotee. Not only is he not a pure devotee, he offended Maharaj Ambarish, he's Vaishnava Aparadi. The whole chapter dedicated to him and what a nonsense he was in Bhagavatam. And yet what happened? When Radharani found out he was there, she went out of her way and she went to him to serve and to give respect. Radharani, the topmost devotee. So it's not that we don't offer respect to people who are in powerful positions, who are in special situations, who have special powers. And then what happened? As a result of that service, Durvasa Muni gave her the benediction that whatever she cooked would taste like nectar. And anybody who ate it would be healthy. And in that way, through his mercy, Yamadeva Yashoda found out about this, and then she got Radharani to come cook for Krishna. So even through this yogi, Radharani got this benediction so she could come closer to Krishna. This is the way. This is the way. Not that we try to isolate ourselves and we can't see this, we can't see that, and only we can be, you know, with Krishna and the gopis, and we can't look this way or that way. This is all sahaja business. This is all, or at least neophyte business. Immature devotional service. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya, he reciprocated with all his devotees. He would show sometimes the, you know, incarnate, he would run through the streets and show his Nrisimhadev bhav. And everybody would run up here. Sometimes he would show Varaha, sometimes he would show Ramachandra to Marigupta and others. And when the brother of Anupam, Sanatan, brother of Sanatan Rupa, Anupam, he was a great devotee of Lord Ram. He didn't try to convert him to become something else. Because he was actually a great devotee of Ram, like Hanuman. So we should serve and hear, serve properly according to the rules and regulations, and serve and hear properly, and then we will find, eventually, through the natural process of devotional service, we will find out what our inclinations are in service, and then Krishna will reciprocate with us and appear to us in that form. In the meantime, we should worship all the forms of the Lord, and all the incarnations of the Lord, expansions of the Lord, and all the incarnations and expansions of the Lord devotees. And in that way we can become actually peaceful in devotional service. Cannot become peaceful by sectarian, separatist ideas and consciousness. Hare Krishna.